This is Bulldog Live on the Pulse. To get in touch about the news of the day, call 866-823-1077. Now, here's Brian Tilton and Bulldog Live.
They tried that on the New York Vermont border. They ran into something there they didn't run into here. They ran into the one percenters who had beautiful lawyers who threatened to tie them up in courts for the next 200 years. So they buried it. They buried it. Here, they're dealing with peasants. They're dealing with backward folk who can't afford a lawyer.
Oh, that was one of the speakers at the U.S. Department of Energy public scoping meeting in September in Colebrook, talking about how one transmission line decided to go underground when it met some resistance because it actually responded to people's concerns. Unlike Northern Pass, that only tries to go underground on land that it does not own, control, or have any access to. They think they do, but I think a whole legal battle will tell otherwise. But anyway, that gets our conversation started here on the second hour of Bulldog Live on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077. As we shared with you late last week, there was an energy transmission project from a source in Canada, from Quebec, hydropower, that would bring electricity into the New England power grid via a transmission line 150 miles long. It's called Clean Power Link, and it would go entirely underwater and underground through Vermont. And as I told you before, that there was going to be some people looking into this. Well, one organization has done some looking into this so far. That is the Conservation Law Foundation and staff attorney Christophe Courchain, who normally joins us in studio for his appearances. But he's in the office working very hard on those public scoping comments that, again, that period closes tomorrow with the U.S. Department of Energy. So, Christophe, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
Okay, so let's start with Clean Power Link, shall we? And what you have found so far, and a lot of similarities to what Clean Power Link is proposing to what a lot of people who oppose Northern Pass has been saying.
Yes, it's quite striking, Brian, that we've been hearing a drumbeat from the Northern Pass developer for quite some time that burial of high voltage transmission lines is, you know, not economic. It's not feasible. It's too difficult here in New England, and that the cost is just prohibitive. And now we have a project, adding to another project, by the way, that was on the table in 2011 and still is, the Northeast Energy Link. But now we have two projects, really, that demonstrate quite convincingly that burial is a strong, viable option, and that there are ways to make it happen. And so we basically had a fact check on some rather self-serving statements on the part of Northern Pass. It's a real game changer to have an active, viable proposal on the table that really is a good point of comparison for what New Hampshire is looking at with Northern Pass.
Well, exactly. It's bringing in hydropower from Canada. It's putting it into the New England power grid. It's 1,000 megawatts of power. Northern Pass is proposed to be 1,200 megawatts. The Clean Energy Link would be completely underground. And what's really interesting is the Burlington Free Press put out, and pictures can tell 1,000 words, they showed the cutout of one of these cables. And it is 6 inches wide, just 6 inches wide. It can, you know, gentleman's there holding it in his hands. And they would just need two of these cables. So you're talking 2 6-inch cables to be buried. Wow, you don't need a 200-foot plus right-of-way for that, do you?
That's right. I mean, it's that, you know, Northern Pass would be thousands of overhead, of new overhead towers, and it's a very different type of impact than putting power lines in disturbed rights of way and underwater using, using advanced technology. So there's clearly a different scale of impacts, and I think that's one reason why the cousin project to the proposal in Vermont, the Champlain-Hudson Power Express, has gone through and already received state approvals in New York and is going through the federal review process with much less controversy and, you know, certainly public outrage. If you look at the number of scoping comments that were filed in that proceeding for very much the same thing that's going on in New Hampshire with Northern Pass, a federal environmental impact statement scoping process, you know, there are several hundred comments that were filed on that proposal in New York, which is a 333-mile project, including 133 miles underground in transportation corridors. So you can just see how pursuing an advanced approach seems to address a number of the community concerns and, you know, is something that clearly is economic for a developer to propose.
Right, because this new proposal is $1.2 billion in estimated cost to go 150 miles underwater, underground, Northern Pass, 187 miles, now revised upwards to $1.4 billion, where it was $1.2 billion originally, to go completely overhead.
That's right. The comparison is just striking, and I think we've seen that over the last few days throughout the region, as people realize that the approach that seems to be working for this developer, Transmission Developers, Inc. in New York, is something that they're interested in pursuing in Vermont. And, you know, the question arises, why can't we figure out a way to do this in New Hampshire? Or why can't the Vermont project serve a lot of the needs, supposed needs that we're hearing about from Northern Pass? We've been looking at all sorts of alternatives to building Northern Pass as proposed, and there are a number of them, including non-transmission alternatives, like increasing the capacity of existing transmission connections between Canada and New England. There are other ways to do that, and certainly then there's the whole set of energy alternatives, like pursuing energy efficiency more aggressively, and doing renewable deployment here in New England, where you know, we could definitely benefit from those types of projects located here in New England in the United States. So there's a number of alternatives, and the Clean Power Link is just the latest one, and it really puts a fine point on it, especially a month after we saw Governor Hassan explain eloquently in the Boston Globe that, you know, there are other ways to do this. There's other ways to skin this cat. And just because Northern Pass says theirs is the only option doesn't mean that's accurate or correct.
Well, you know, and we look at this, Christophe Courchain joining us from the Conservation Law Foundation, CLF.org, you know, looking at this proposal, and I understand Clean Power Link, there's probably still a few more details that would need to be critically analyzed. I understand that, as Conservation Law Foundation will continue to analyze those as well. You know, but here's the thing. The debate, it has really put a lot of things on the table for people to consider. How can we get imports of hydropower, if that is something that the region concludes that it definitely needs? How do we get it right? How do we minimize the environmental impacts? How do we minimize the socioeconomic impacts, all of which we've been talking about for a very long time? And, of course, adding competition to the mix as well.
That's right. And Brian, we, CLF, has been a leading advocate of looking at these projects. You know, there were a number of them, and they're in different configurations, and they serve slightly different purposes. We've been strongly supportive of the idea of, let's let the projects compete against each other. Let's get the best potential project that we can for the region, and that's not a matter of making the perfect the enemy of the good. That's a matter of basic economic principles. Get the best deal you can that's the best both in terms of the public interest in terms of environmental issues, in terms of climate benefits, in terms of community impacts. All these various elements are important things to judge these projects on. And you're right, there are certainly a number of issues associated with any project of this kind. To bring hydropower down from Canada, we should definitely be looking at the impacts of the power source. We should mm-hmm. definitely be looking at whether there are alternatives to the project that, you know, the particular developer wants to pursue. But notwithstanding the fact that those issues need to be studied carefully as part of this, the value of competition in surfacing the best approaches that really start to address some of the problems that we've seen, as New Hampshire has really reacted so negatively to Northern Pass, we really start to see that there is a way forward. We've been calling for it for a long time. We're not pursuing this, as Northern Pass cynically put on its website on Friday afternoon. We're not pursuing these questions out of a, you know, some type of special agenda or
a fundraising effort.
fundraising campaign. You know that that's when you start veering from the merits and start attacking the people who are stakeholders in the statewide and regional discussion, it's pretty telling when that's the strategy.
And especially coming from an organization that has spent I don't know how many millions on a PR campaign that is still yet to sell the majority of the people on this project after all these years.
That's right, and so that's another point, Brian, that I think is worth bringing up, is that Northern Pass has pursued a very adversarial approach to developing this project. They've tried to marginalize people who have raised concerns about it, and that's not the way to build a controversial, difficult project. And so we're encouraged by the early signs with Transmission Developers, Inc., because they are interested in engaging. They've proposed a low-impact solution. And in New York, just to give a sense of scale, they addressed some of the stakeholder concerns with going down the Hudson River and burying the line in Lake Champlain with a $117 million environmental trust fund and making that commitment. Taking that into account, building that into the cost of their project, and going to make some significant improvements in aquatic resources in the state of New York. What we have, by contrast, here in New Hampshire is virtually nothing on the commitment side. We have a $7.5 million job fund, which is a very small percentage of the annual profits that Northeast Utilities will make just for having the line there. Something on the order of $500,000 a year.
Because it'll be spread out over a number of years. It's not a lump sum payment.
That's right. And so, it's a really stark contrast. And I think that the state and your listeners would do well to think about that. There's been all this discussion that the people opposing Northern Pass are just against everything. And I think what we're seeing in the reaction to this potential approach is that that is absolutely not the case. We are against a bad project.
That's exactly it. And as our listeners have heard, when I covered the four public scoping meetings in Concord, in Plymouth, in Whitefield, and Colebrook, they heard one resounding theme over and over again. And I even played this for a friend of mine from New York. A relative of mine who lives in New York right now, because he asked me, how's this all going? I played for him some audio clips, and he says, gee, if they just buried this, would these people go away? I said, most of them, yes. He says, well, then what's the problem? I mean, even he got it, and he's only known about this project for 5 minutes.
I mean, I think what we see here, Brian, is people of New Hampshire know when they're being sold a bill of goods.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the dogged insistence that this project has had on pursuing its preferred proposal, which really at the core of it is that 140 miles along the existing PSNH right-of-way. That's really the core of this. And you're probably not going to bury a project on that right-of-way. It's a very rugged, rugged corridor. And so, you know, you have to peel back the onion one layer and say, why are they so committed to this idea when there are other ideas out there that could work much better and address stakeholder and community concerns? And I think if you look at the PSNH problems in the state, as they continue to lose customers, as they continue to experience really the problems being the last remaining utility in New England that owns coal-fired power plants that are really just failing and causing people's electric bills to be so high. You see, they're looking for a way to make their financial picture work. That is not, while that might be of value to them, that's not of paramount concern to the public interest or to the state.
All right.
And so that's really how we look at it, and it's an important piece of context.
Sure is. Christoph Gorshain, one last thought before we have to let you go here, and that is tomorrow is the ending of the public scoping period. This is the public comment period for the U.S. Department of Energy on Northern Pass. It ends tomorrow. I know that's why you're not able to join us in the studio, because you're still polishing up Conservation Law Foundation scoping comments as well. What do you want to add to this?
Well, I think the important function that we're planning to serve with our comments is really to highlight the importance of getting this alternatives analysis right. The Department of Energy has to analyze all reasonable alternatives to the preferred proposal. And that's really where we'll be focusing. I'd encourage you to take a look for a preview. There's a joint letter that CLF and a number of other organizations in the state's environmental community submitted to the Department of Energy last week. If you go to clf.org, I believe it's still the lead story, or it's right on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to take a look at our comments that we made on a variety of issues, but especially on this alternative analysis issue. And also at the bottom of that story, if you click through, there's a link to the DOE's EIS website, northernpasseis.us, where you can enter your own comment, and we strongly encourage everyone listening to weigh in. I'll note that, you know, before the new route was announced in the June timeframe,
mm-hmm.
There's been an additional 2,000 comments or so that have been filed, and I suspect that number will go up substantially in the next couple days. And so there's definitely been an effort on Northern Pass's part to get some comments from supporters. And if you look through, there's a lot of one-line comments that say, I support Northern Pass up there. So lend your voice, provide your feedback. You can take our points or take new points or whatever you'd like to do, but please weigh in by tomorrow, the end of tomorrow.
All right, very good. Christoph Gorshain, Conservation Law Foundation, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. Keep up all the good work.
All right, you too. Take care. We'll chat again soon. All right, bye-bye. Bulldog Live continues here at 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse. And before we get to our timeout, I'm going to take a little longer here because I want to share with you what the town of Bristol had written to the U.S. Department of Energy just actually within the last month. They addressed this to Brian Mills, who's the senior planning advisor at the U.S. Department of Energy, and he's the one that's fielding a lot of the stuff. They write, Dear Mr. Mills, we are writing to you today on behalf of the community of Bristol, New Hampshire, which is one of the towns located on the proposed route of the Northern Pass project. As currently proposed, there will be 2.4 miles of new transmission line along the existing right-of-way in Bristol. The purpose of this correspondence is to express our concern with the potential visual, environmental, and economic impacts with regard to the project. The current and proposed transmission lines pass through some sensitive environmental areas, including hilly terrain, wetlands, and the Pemigewasset River. A review of the plan includes indicates that the existing 115 kV line will be relocated within the existing right-of-way in addition to the construction of the new transmission line. This will result in the disturbance of twice the soil during the construction of the towers. In addition, a visual inspection of the project maps indicates that additional removal of trees within the right-of-way will be necessary to accommodate the relocation of existing towers and the construction of the new towers. This will create additional visual and environmental impacts as well. A review of the plans also indicates that the new transmission towers will average 90 feet in height, which is more than twice the average height of the existing towers. Some of the new towers will be more than 110 feet high. Towers of this height will create economic impacts to property values along the transmission route, as they are the most visible reminder of the project. Recent information indicates that proximity of a property to the project area can have a negative economic impact on its value. This may create a hardship on property owners who may need or want to sell their land and homes by discouraging those who might otherwise consider purchasing property in this beautiful and scenic part of New Hampshire. As stewards of our town, we have a responsibility to honor the objectives stated in our town's master plan, which include safeguarding the rural quality of Bristol, conserving and showcasing our natural assets, maintaining the economic viability of Bristol's lands and forests, and maintaining the health of natural systems that support life in Bristol. The impacts of this proposed project run counter to those stated objectives, and in fact, counter to the scenic beauty that many towns in New Hampshire strive to protect. We would respectfully request that alternatives to the proposal plan and proposed route be considered. The environmental, visual, and economic impacts to Bristol and other communities along the route need to be weighed equally when evaluating whether the purported benefits of the project are worth the cost. We appreciate the opportunity to present our concerns and hope that you will give them the serious consideration they deserve. Please do not hesitate to contact the town administrator by phone and email if you have any questions or require any additional information. Signed by all five members of the Bristol Board of Selectmen. So that would be Don Milbrand, Joe Denning? Yep, Joe Denning, Janet Cody, Sean Legault, and Betsy Schneider. And copies of this letter were also sent to the entire New Hampshire congressional delegation as well. So that's the town of Bristol writing to the U.S. Department of Energy not too long ago. That was after the public scoping comments.